Stress often forces us to a high performance state. It's often where you do your best work. Just think, you've got a gig coming up, you energize, the cortisol is flowing through your body. That is designed to help you perform.
Do you think the universe was screaming at you? If you believe in that.
Do you
believe that there were signs that were just going, please slow down. You need to slow down.
Exactly.
And the second thing that I guess I want to bring up is, why are we like this? Welcome back to another episode of Good Things with Brent Lindekew. We are at the beautiful Flame Studios, and I've got Helen Nicholson sitting next to me, the queen of mindfulness, if I can call you that.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Welcome. I'm so excited. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. I decided to bring you onto the podcast because I had your book, first of all. So this got sent to me, and it was sitting on my bookshelf. And towards the end of last year, I got sent a podcast by Mel Robbins with regards to busyness and stress and that thing that sometimes happens to us where we get to the burnout point. And I kind of feel like this is an important conversation to be having now. Over the last decade that I've been doing this, I've noticed our cycle of readers towards the end of the year get very tired. Maybe Afrikaans is such a descriptive word, you could say mug or gatvol. But we do get to a point where we almost are at burnout. And what I've come to realize, which is a crazy thing, is that after the pandemic, I see that now. I see that sort of at the beginning of the year, March, April, which is really scary because I don't know, are we tired so early on in the year? And so I feel it's important for me to have this discussion. So maybe our viewers and our listeners can learn a little bit more about what to do to not get there. So Helen, great to have you here. Before we get into the crux of it, let me ask, how did you get into mindfulness and knowing so much about this?
So I think I had two pivotal instances. The first one was, I have identical twin daughters, and when they were 7 or 8, their molar teeth fell out. And because they're identical, their molar teeth fell out on the same day, and they went to go and deposit their teeth in their slippers, and they expected a visit from the tooth fairy, of course, who was me. And I'll never forget, I forgot about the tooth fairy, and they went to go and look for their teeth in their slippers, and with their sad little faces, they said, "Mommy, the tooth fairy hasn't come." And the worst part of the story, and this is a true story, is I did not just forget the first night, I forgot the second, third, and fourth night. Yes, I know. You know, they say you've done a good job as a parent when your children can afford to pay for their own therapy. And they're now 28 and they're quite well-adjusted, beautiful children. But, you know, it was a real, because I'll never forget, on that fifth morning, my daughter Sabrina looked up at me with the saddest little face she'd ever seen. And she said to me, "Mommy, I don't believe in the tooth fairy anymore." And it was like a dagger in my heart, because what I realized, and especially when you've only got the twins, I had no children to practice my newfound wisdom, because often when we mess up, you can practice on the others. I didn't have that luxury. And I also realized I wasn't just missing out on the tooth fairy. I was missing out on life. Yeah. And I was in that Monday, Friday, suddenly we were in October of that year. And I thought, how did we get to be in October? And I just, it gave me pause. Unfortunately, not pause enough. Because subsequently, later on, I had to have another slap around the head to get really mindful. I had to have a health scare. And, you know, we'd been to the Drakensberg. I'd been sick. I doubled up on my antibiotics because I thought, let me get doubly better. And they contraindicated each other. And I ended up in anaphylactic shock in the middle of the Drakensberg. And my whole family said to me, "Why do you work so hard? Why do you prioritize everything else other than yourself?" And I had to sit with that. And, you know, there's nothing like a real serious health scare to make you sit up and think, I'm not living a mindful life. I'm going through the motions. And even if you've watched a black and white movie, it was like that. And I thought things had to change.
So there's two things that I want to say. Yeah. The first is, do you think the universe was screaming at you? If you believe in that.
Do you
believe that there were signs that were just going, please slow down. You need to slow down.
Exactly.
And the second thing that I guess I want to bring up is, why are we like this? As human beings, why do we join the rat race and then ultimately think that that ultimately matters? To work as hard as you possibly can, to miss out on the tooth fairy and other moments until it gets to a point where you have to turn it around. Why are we like that?
Well, I think I completely agree with you. I think life whispers to you. If you don't listen to the whisper, it starts to shout. And if you don't listen to the shout, it starts to scream. I mean, I once did a talk for a bunch of cardiologists, and they said that no one has a heart attack unless they've had a symptom a year before. Because so many people, and often that symptom is reflux. And it's been amazing in the talks that I've done all over the world how many people have come up to me and said they've got chronic reflux. And no doctor has even connected the dots. So our body shows us signs. And if we pay attention to them, then you can actually see when you are feeling out of sync and out of whack. But I think to your second point is we're so busy doing. We're human doings and not human beings. And I think that until often, unfortunately, it's either a divorce, a health scare, some big instance often happens that forces us to realize that this is actually precious and we're wasting our time, sometimes on things that actually don't matter so much.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people find their self-worth in their work. So their day-to-day grind and what they do, I certainly find my self-worth in what I do. And when I opened up the podcast, I spoke about that other podcast that I got. And at first I was a little bit upset. So Mandy Wiener, good friend of mine, she sent it to me. And I thought, like, I was a bit, why? Why did you send this to me? Am I too busy? Am I too... But after I'd listened to it, I realized that she was being a very kind friend. And I hope that if anybody learns anything from this discussion, they do the same. They take this and they send this to people that they feel can learn something from it. Because here's what I did. It wasn't some great sweeping statement that was made. The conversation was all about how we get caught up in that work or the self-worth that we find. And it will lead to burnout. And sometimes those things don't matter that we put so much of our effort into. And since that day, I mean, you're going to hopefully leave us with a couple of tips here on how to be a bit more mindful. But this is what I did. And maybe tell me if I'm crazy or if I'm on the right track. I decided, okay, we need to take maybe 10 steps back. I have maybe 10 jobs that I do every day. So running a business, writing articles, doing some radio stuff, doing charity stuff, doing TV stuff. You can label them as all 10 jobs because some people only do that one thing. Getting up on stage and delivering keynotes. Some people, that's the only thing they do. So I'd like to say I've got 10 jobs. And pre the end of last year, every day I was doing 10 jobs. And that for me was incredibly stressful. And so after the fact, I decided to do just one thing every day. So look at my day ahead, look at what is most important, and that becomes my one thing that I need to do that day. And yes, the other things need to be done, but they can fit in when and where. And if I don't get to that email and some client gets really upset with me, so what? It's not the end of the world. I'll get to it tomorrow or I'll get to it later. And I must say that refocusing and reframing my day to just look at one thing that's really important has helped me be less stressed. Is that a good way of doing things?
No, it's a brilliant way of doing things. And one of my epiphanies, to your point, was I had always defined myself by my ability to multitask. I even got a job once because they said she was a great multitasker, and I kind of wore that as a badge of honor, and I thought that was a good thing. And only later, when I started researching the neuroscience of performance, to realize that no one can multitask. Our brain is actually a single processing unit, and that's one of the reasons why we are getting so overwhelmed and so tired and so anxious, because all of those are linked. Because basically, our brain likes to do one thing at a time and move to the next one. So, you know, and one of the reasons why that strategy that you've just spoken about must be so successful is you're giving your brain a chance to go into deep work mode. So you're actually going into your creative space, which energizes us, and you're letting it go down that rabbit hole and then pausing and then maybe doing another thing, you know, later on or the following day. I think And for everyone listening here, you know, often we're on our email, then, you know, other emails are popping in. So what we're doing is we're constantly task switching. And the research is saying that it takes 11 to 13 minutes for you to go out and watch, see what another email is, and then come back again. So that 11 to 13 minutes cumulatively over the course of a day is exhausting, and it's a big waste of time. So if you realize, so one of, related to my awareness that multitasking is not the way and that unitasking is the way of high performers, was the fact to realize, or the realization to give myself permission to recover. The power of recovery. One of the things, I went on a course in the States called The Corporate Athlete, which we now run because I'm so passionate about this message, is that to realize that stress is not the bad guy. Stress often forces us to a high performance state. It's often where you do your best work. Just think, you've got a gig coming up, you energize, the cortisol is flowing through your body. That is designed to help you perform. What we don't do well is we don't recover. Our body wants to go up and then it wants to come down. What we're doing is we're taking it up and then just staying in that cortisol kind of space. So I used words as a metaphor because I love to read and I love to write. And I've imagined your day as a sentence. Mm-hmm. What is your full stop at the end of your day? What activity can you do at the end of your day that marks the end of your day? In other words, that's the end of your working day. So I do three things. One is my husband and I go for a walk. Then I have a bath and I change my clothes. I'm that girl in my pajamas at 6 p.m.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
And then we sit down on the couch and have a whiskey. And those are the three full stops that happen. And then that means, whew,
done.
Now we're done. And then whatever I haven't done at that stage, we'll go to tomorrow. Because I also know when I do work at night, I make mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm not actually, so I treat my day almost as a sprint. And so I'm sprinting and I'm going to go, go, go. I'm going to do some deep work periods where I'm switching off my email notifications on my phone. And then I'm going to sprint and then we're going to have the full stop. Because what I've realized, people don't even have a comma in their day. They're just pausing to kind of stuff some food in their face and then they're going to go back to work. And it's not serving us. So if you extend that metaphor, so daily full stops, imagine your week as a paragraph. And how do you recover on the weekend? So religions that have Sabbaths, I think we can all learn a lot from them. So to actually take like a rest day. Mm. So on Saturdays, I used to run around supermarkets and go and do grocery shopping. Now I don't do any of that stuff. I stay at home. I go for a walk with my friends. I have coffee and then I lie on my couch. I watch Netflix or I read a book and I don't do anything. Saturday is my rest day.
I think the Xennials or the Zen, whatever, Gen Z, they call it rotting. So you literally just rot. You lay on the couch and you rot. You veg.
So I'd like to have a more positive spin. I made and say, like, it's rotting with a purpose. Because in other words, to give yourself permission to, because the thing is, I think we think we've got to be on the whole time. And to take one day where you do no work. And that is your recovery day. I remember hearing Adrian Gore, the CEO of Discovery, and he said that I asked him what the secret of his high performance was. And he said his Sabbath. He said, as a religious Jewish man, he switches off his phone from Friday night to Saturday night. And he said, just like a laptop is being charged, he said he can start feeling his energy start to come back at about 4 o'clock. And I think in this world of overwhelm that we're currently in, I think people who have that ability to disengage and they do it properly. So in other words, you switch off your phone for a couple of hours. You just give yourself permission to exhale. And then monthly recovery rituals. You know, imagine your chapter is a month. Often the only way we know a month is about to go from April to May is debit orders go through our account, you know, which is not a great, it's not very inspiring. So I have a facial or a massage once a month at the last Friday of every month, and I book them in advance because the whole thing, big thing about recovery, I've realized, is no one's coming to schedule your recovery for you. You know your body better than anyone else. You know I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling your batteries and you need something. Other people only notice you need that recovery when you get sick.
Yeah. So listen, my assistant is sitting somewhere, she's over there. And Taylor knows more than anyone because she gets at the end of my tether. So when I get to that, I know when my energy's super low, and then she has to deal with it. I have to phone her and be like, listen, you need to move this meeting or you need to phone that client. And luckily I have her as a buffer. I have a question though. How did we go, or how long did it take to go from that health scare to where you are now, where you understand, and maybe now you know better than ever, but where was the mark where you were like, okay, it's been a month, it's been a year? How long did it take you to get to the point where you were like, I need to be more mindful, this is how I'm going to do it?
It definitely, after that health scare, it was an immediate switch. But I also at the same time was studying high performance. And I realized that the way I was performing was also not me at my maximum value. You know, I wasn't working intelligently, because I also at the same time read a book called Deep Work by a guy called Cal Newport, which has been very significant, where he speaks about the power of working in 90-minute stretches. So all you do is one thing for 90 minutes. I mean, it sounds so basic, but the problem is none of us are doing it.
I've got such a silly smile on my face because I mentioned the one thing without knowing that this is where the conversation was going to go.
Yes.
And I didn't learn that from anywhere. I just looked at my life and how chaotic I had made it, and how I was wearing this badge of honor when people would go, how are you? And I'd go, oh, I'm so busy. I got so much going on. Oh, you won't believe. Like, I was being that busy guy. And since then, I mean, it's great to hear that this is the way. It's got to be one thing, 90 minutes, whatever it is, one thing.
Well, I think we often confuse motion with progress, you know, or we think we're in this constant motion. And I think when you really sit, like obviously you did, and think, where am I delivering my most value? You know, I think for people like you and I that are in a creative process where you're writing books, you creating things, I also realized a lot about my creative process. I can't have a lot of meetings. I can't, because
I hate meetings.
I hate meetings
with a passion. I mean, I know that we need them.
Yes.
And I know that we need to connect with humans. But they really do break my creative flow. Mm. Really do.
So now I only have meetings from 3 to 5 and I batch them. So I'll have like 2 back to back, because I can't have meetings scattered. It's not good for me strategically or creatively.
Oh my gosh. I hope we're all taking notes here, because I think this could really help a lot of people, not just in the creative space, but in that working space where you're deep diving and you're giving it your all, and then you've got a break for a meeting.
I mean, in our business, we've given everyone 9 extra recovery days per year. So we've tried to walk our talk, you know, and we've kind of allocated them with public holidays. So they're not just random. But I've realized if I want a high-performing team, then we've got to recover more. Because that's the problem with people, is we set our goals. So 2025, everyone is going to achieve all these great things. But then I say to them, what is your amplified recovery strategy?
Yeah.
Because we can't increase our performance without increasing our recovery. Otherwise, the equation is out of whack. And that's why people are feeling so exhausted. Because it's
now, at the beginning of the year.
And it's the first year I've seen that it's as if people never had a December break.
I worked through December, but also, was it really work? It was like an hour a day, maybe 2 hours a day, that I just made sure there were some articles going out. That there was the rest of my team all had their big December break. And I decided then in February I would take 10 days and just get away, which I did. Mm. And for me, I feel so refreshed because of that. And on those 10 days, I really didn't work. Like, there was no work. It was a real break. I was in the sea. I was drinking pina coladas at 8 a.m. It was fantastic. And I feel like now, being in the space where I'm going into corporate spaces and I'm climbing on stage, and I can feel people are tired. And it's such a sad thing to see that we're at the beginning of the year. And if you're already like this now, you need to be implementing that recovery. People need to, and it's not about going away, because I don't think many people can afford to take leave or to go on holiday. But that, what did you say, the end of the paragraph?
Yes.
You need that end of the paragraph that's not your debit orders coming off, and rather, I don't know, taking your dogs to their favorite dog park to go hang out with your family, and a little blanket and some picnic food that your dogs might steal. I don't know. Just have something in place to then have that break, so we can start again clean in the new month. Is that a good enough strategy?
It is. I mean, the research shows that 3 days to try and get away, especially with a lot of public holidays coming up. And if people, even if, you know, I know finances are stretched, but to get out into nature, and preferably in a place where there's no Wi-Fi or bad cell signal. So like, no, going
you need
camping.
You need the bad cell signal.
Exactly. You know, those are the places I think that we're going to be seeking out, you know, in the future. Because really, nature is just such a powerful, just a de-stressor. Mm.
Yeah, you're making me dream of the sea and where I was in Feb and to go back. It really does something for the soul.
You see, I think we also need to challenge that South African paradigm of taking a December break. I think that that's no longer good enough. I think we've got to plan little three-day breaks throughout the year. So, you know, that you don't get to that exhaustion. Because, I mean, it happens every year. By September, October, everyone is literally crawling.
We see it from our readership. Mm. So it's the most interesting thing to see that when people are mukh or khatful, that they just don't tune into Good Things Guy. No. And we can literally have people that are top fans on our Facebook pages that are calling us liars when it comes to stories that we've written. But I need to, I mean, your book, right? I need to bring this up. Because we're switching off our cell phones on these 3 days that we're going away. We're taking a break, but we can still read. Mm. And you've got a couple of books out. Mm. I've got this one here today, Mindfulness, where you give practical advice for this chaotic world that we live in. I read here on the back that it says, you've trained over 12,000 people in what Time magazine calls the biggest performance game changer. So it's not little. By any means.
No.
And you've got a second book.
Yes.
Which is?
Networking for Introverts.
Okay.
So that came out last year. And in many ways, it's about mindful networking. I mean, my business is the networking company. So mindfulness was very much my personal journey about burnout, what I've learned to enable me to perform better.
Yes.
But networking is if you build relationships with people, one lunch at a time mindfully, or one coffee at a time mindfully, then you're going to have great relationships. And there's no doubt that people who age well have got good relationships. It's about their social capital. So that's where the two books
come together. Mm. And what I love, I mean, it's a bit of an antithesis that I said that I hate meetings. But when you mention mindfulness meetings and maybe having an idea or a goal as to what that meeting is going to be about, that changes the game. Mm. A lack of lunch with someone you like.
The best.
It's better than, I don't know, sitting in a meeting where it feels like you're going into the headmaster's office and you've been naughty at school. So I think mindfulness and meeting for mindfulness is two great points. Where can people get your books if they want more information? If they want to read.
They can get it from Exclusive Books or on Take A Lot or HelenNicholson.com.
Helen, I've loved chatting to you.
Can I give you my present?
Oh, what? Oh, we forgot about that. What is this present?
So this is...
I'm so nervous.
I said to Brent earlier that it might traumatize him, but I wanted to give some context. So I read a book at the end of last year called 4,000 Weeks.
Yes.
Which was very game-changing for me. And what it says is that if we live to 85, we have 4,000 weeks in our life. I know. So... you can buy merch, which I did when I was in London last time, and this is one of the pieces of merch when I was on a very boring meeting at once, you colour in all your little weeks, because I turned 55, which if I can see over here.
Okay, I understand why you say that's traumatizing.
No, but it's not, because it is.
It's like an hourglass.
Yes. I've got mine up on my desk. I had it boarded. And what it does is every Sunday then I colour in my little week to say, because the problem is we think, oh, well, life will get better in 2026 and life will get better in June. And this encourages you to mindfully be present in this week right now.
Because this is all we have.
The 9th of April.
Can I ask you an OCD question?
Yes.
Did you colour them in with different colours or all the same?
No, all in black.
Okay.
With my favourite pen. So, I think you can go mad and you can colour in yours however you like.
Well, thank you so much for that lovely gift and thank you so much for spending a bit of time with me. It's been really mindful having you here in studio. I love that you gave me almost validation that this idea that I have to focus on one thing is a good thing. And I think for all of the viewers and the listeners out there, they need a change of pace. I see it. We are chaotic. We are stressful. We take on too much. And really, is your job your self-worth? Is that all you are? I think we are so much more. And we need to be focusing on 4,000 weeks. That's such a great ending. I love it. Thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Ah, what a great show. We'll see you next week with another great guest where we'll learn a little bit more about good things.